This event has celebrated children's books for decades. It fosters an appreciation for reading among young people throughout the world. Today is International Children's Book Day. We're talking about children's lit here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The day is usually held in early April every year, or on the birthday of celebrated author Hans Christian Andersen. It's meant to call attention to inspiring young people to read. Author Stephanie Bodine has 6 published picture books and 9 novels for young readers. Her 10th novel, called The Tomb, comes out later this year. She is a UW River Falls graduate. She now lives in Hudson, Wisconsin. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, where does your mind go when you're starting to formulate a children's book?
It goes kind of everywhere. For me, typically with my novels, it kind of starts with a what if question. Like, I've heard something or read something, typically a strange discovery in science, and I sort of think, well, what if, and then kind of take it out of the box into something strange that turns into a story.
Oh, so like little things in your world are jumping off points.
Absolutely. Everything. I'm very nosy. I listen to other people's conversations. My mind is always going.
And then so you thread those little things together, or how do you pick up on a theme, and how then can you take that to a book?
Well, typically it's just the idea, and often it's like, okay, but who is this about and who's going to be my main character? And it certainly is not fully formed. It takes me a really long time to figure out what is happening, and then I just go from there.
So how is it different when you're working on a young adult novel versus writing a picture book?
Well, picture books obviously are way shorter, but you have such an economy of words. Like, most of my picture books are about 500 words, and every word has to be perfect if you only have 500 words. There's kind of a lot more room for error with the novels. Like, those are typically about 50,000 words. So you don't have to sweat so much about every single word, but it's more bigger concepts that you have to, that you really have to deal with the novels.
So for picture books, you might ruminate on a sentence for a number of days, or, you know, it just doesn't all come to you.
No, often, well, like, I can write a draft of a picture book in maybe an hour, but that's a draft. And then sometimes that thing has to simmer for months. Maybe even it'll sit in a drawer for years. I had one picture book that I wrote and sent it in, and it got rejected. So I'm like, okay. And I put it in a drawer for about 4 years. And then I pulled it back out, and I thought, I think there's something here. And I revised again, sent it back to the very same editor who had rejected it 4 years previous, and they bought it. So you never know.
And sometimes it might just take you to getting to a different place with that book, or a new revelation, or a new thing you might experience in life to be able to bring it back to that book.
Absolutely. I think there are some books that I started thinking, okay, here's a great idea, and then I just sort of lacked maybe the exposure or the experience that I needed to come at it from an angle that would make it the story it needed to be.
Well, some subjects may be too extreme for tiny kids, but language and content seems to be a big challenge with older readers. What do you consider when thinking about age-appropriate material?
I think I kind of balk at the word appropriate and inappropriate. I think those get bandied about a lot. I think with the older readers, with middle grade, with young adult, it's more a case of what resonates with that reader. And you think about the difference between a 9 or a 10-year-old as compared to, say, a 14 or 15-year-old, and the world that they are experiencing. They're having different social experiences, different physiological experiences. And so you need to think about, what am I going to write that's going to resonate with this reader? It's definitely going to be different from a 9 or 10-year-old when you're going to a 14 or 15-year-old. So it becomes more of that, like, what am I going to write that's going to resonate with them?
Do you worry that you don't live in their world and that you might be too far from it to truly understand what they might be wanting to, read about?
Well, I have kind of lived through those ages three times, first myself and then my two daughters. So I feel like I've got a little experience there. But then on the other hand, I think some things never change. I think we all can feel the same emotions. We all can feel loneliness. We all can feel isolated. We all can be sad. And those emotions don't change no matter what your age is. And so I don't feel like I have that tough of a time putting myself back in those shoes. And I try really hard to make sure that it's going to resonate with those readers.
Stephanie Bodine is with us. She's the author of 6 picture books, 9 novels for young readers. We're talking about the craft of writing children's books and young adult novels. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What are some children's literature that has resonated with you over the years? Do you have a favorite children's book? What about a picture book or short story that your kids devour? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Stephanie, you know, sometimes people think, well, I have an idea for a children's book. Shouldn't it be easy for me to just put that book together and get it out there? Is there a pretty long process to this? Is it more arduous than we might imagine?
I feel like it's the hardest thing that I do. It's never easy. It's writing, being a writer, the only thing constant about the business I'm in is the doubt. Every day, that's my constant companion. Is what I'm writing ever going to get read? Is it horrible? Then once it's actually sold and it's going to come out, it's like, well, is anybody going to read it? Are people going to hate it? And so the only thing constant is the doubt. And you just kind of have to persevere and push through it and write the story that you feel is the story you want to write. And then hopefully it will find its audience in the end.
Is it a pretty competitive marketplace for writers, children's literature?
I think each writer, sometimes it's like, I need to put blinders on. I need to not pay attention to what's going on out there, who got this deal or who's getting this attention. It's about the story that I'm writing, and it's a story that only I can tell, and so I have to focus on that. Otherwise, you could just get bogged down because somebody's always going to have a bigger selling book or get more money for this book or get more attention, and you just kind of have to put blinders on and write the book that you were meant to write.
How does someone go about getting into writing children's books?
Well, when I started, it was all snail mail. There were no computers, there wasn't internet, so you would mail off your story with a self-addressed stamped envelope and wait 6 months for a rejection to show up, and then you'd mail it off again. And now it is all online. I mean, you could send a query letter to an editor and get a response this afternoon. It's completely changed. Everything is on the internet now. So I think that has streamlined the process so much. And there are wonderful organizations, like especially for children's writers, the Society of the SCBWI, Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, is a huge resource for people just getting into this, and also people who are already in it. There are a lot of wonderful resources out there.
Well, let's bring in Tyra now, joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Tyra.
Hey, good morning, you all.
Good morning.
I was, you know, obviously listening to the show, but my mother writes children's books. She's got a series out called Bear and Katie, and she couldn't get anything published through big publishing houses, so she created her own, which is Black Lab Publishing. So there are great ways to get, you know, outside of big publishing companies, ways to get things done.
Well, Tyra, thank you so much for the call. And Stephanie, you can also be self-published or create your own publishing company.
I think people need to take a path that's right for them. For me, my path was definitely, I had the goal of being published by a traditional publisher. And that's not an easy road. I dealt with a lot of rejection, a lot of failure. I still deal with rejection. Even having an agent and being successful, there are going to be people that say, this book just isn't right for us. But I think people need to find their own path that's right for them.
Well, Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Stephanie Bodine, author of children's books, news is next. Today is International Children's Book Day. It's a global celebration of children's literature, calling attention to children's books throughout the world and inspiring young people to read. Let's bring in Tessa Schmidt now. She chairs a committee selecting an International Children's Literature Award winner. She's a public library youth and inclusive services consultant with Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction. She promotes library experiences for children and teenagers. Tessa, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, why do you think it's critical to call attention to books for children?
Well, books are really one of the first experiences that kids have to see themselves and others in the world, whether it's a simple board book that's just introducing young children, babies and toddlers, to the concepts of things around them, to really exposing them to routines and imaginary things and other kids and people like them, both in their immediate life and around the world. And so a day like today, celebrating children's books, but also the concept of international children's books all over the world, is really a special celebration.
Well, going to the library and looking at rows and rows of children's books, it's really hard to know where to start. How do you curate? How do you start that process?
Well, certainly, for that family who might be wondering, what do I do? What do I look at first? Absolutely talk to the public librarian who is there. That's their passion, and that's what they are trained to do and like nothing better to do than to help families find a book that's right for them or to expose them to new ideas, especially when you're usually just trying to corral your child or only seeing the spines of books. It's hard to really get a feel for what's in them or what's right for the interests of my child. I think that there are a lot of criteria that go into, in the case that I'm most often dealing with as a public library consultant, what's on the shelves in public libraries. That's a local policy, and usually collection development policy has criteria to reflect, obviously, high standards, as well as the needs of the local community that it is serving. Certainly, the American Library Association has a lot of awards that are given to books for children and teens, and they set a pretty high bar for producing high-quality books and awarding the efforts of authors and illustrators and publishers and the many people who have their hands in producing books. And there are quite a few awards. Certainly, I think there are some like the Newbery and Caldecott, which are most commonly known.
Long-standing traditions.
They say, oh, I know that gold sticker, but there are other stickers as well that mean different things. And I think, obviously, our award winners are a great place to start, but especially nowadays, I think that because those awards have a lot of prestige, they kind of push the publishing of all of the books. So whether, you know, there's a few that win, but all the others that were vying for the prize tend to be really great books that deserve attention as well.
Are we seeing more diversity in children's literature?
That's a very on-topic issue in children's books. I would say yes, there are certainly more and more books getting attention and being published, but it is not enough. There are a lot of efforts out there. I'm sure that many listeners have heard of the We Need Diverse Books effort and other things that are drawing attention to the lack of books that are published that are both by and about people of color or books that are written own voices, so the authentic stories of the experiences of basically non-white people that aren't always in the books that we see for kids. So I think that there is attention to it. I think that there are many players who are thinking about it, whether it's the librarians who are selecting books for library users, whether it's the families, the publishers, the authors and illustrators. There are a lot of folks who are who have some interest in this, and I think there are changes being done on a lot of different levels to bring more attention to it. There's some small efforts that I think are hopefully paving the way for more deliberate and authentic efforts. There are, for example, in the past year, there are many more books, picture books, that feature just generally children with brown skin tones, which is great. They aren't necessarily culturally or ethnically identified in the text or the illustrations, but showing more reflective of a classroom or community that you might see here in Wisconsin or anywhere in the U.S. And I think that's important, but obviously books that also really honor the experiences of kids beyond just the color is important as well. And changes are coming, but we need more.
Well, you've brought a stack of books. I brought a stack of books. Can you tell us what you brought in?
Sure. I brought in a few different books, as you mentioned. Currently, my focus is on a committee for the American Library Association looking at books that are translated, but I also have some award winners from American publishers of American books. The one that's sitting on top, so I'll start with that, is a book that got a lot of attention just a few months ago when the awards were announced of all the books that were published in 2017. So they're the 2018 awards. And the book I have right here is called, it's a picture book. It's called Crown, An Ode to the Fresh Cut. And it's written by Derek Barnes and illustrated by Gordon C. James. And if you were to see this book in front of you, you would see a really proud, young African-American boy who has a fresh new haircut and who's just beaming. It's a painted illustration because of his pride at how he feels good about himself after visiting the barbershop. And this book is a great example of the kind of books that we need more of that reflect the contemporary experience of both, you could say, anyone who has had the experience of getting their hair done and feeling good about themselves. But this book specifically honors the African-American experience of a young boy visiting his barber and also seeing the others who are in that shop as well, and how it just makes them really feel good about their different styles and their comfort and confidence out in the world. And it's a really positive book with great language and incredible illustrations. And it was honored with the Newbery Honor as well as the Caldecott Honor, and then also received the Coretta Scott King Award, which is an award also given by the American Library Association specifically for books by and about the African-American experience, and it received the Author and Illustrator Honor as well. So lots of stickers on this book. And so, again, speaking to your question earlier, this was a great book and got a lot of attention, but we need many more like this.
I also want to call out attention to author illustrators. I mean, it's one thing to be able to write the book, but if you can also illustrate, that is a pretty amazing thing because you're really doing a lot of different brain action going on there. I brought in, there's this one book by Emily Kate Moon. It's called June, J-O-O-N-E, about a five-year-old. She lives in a yurt with her grandfather. She has a pet turtle, and it is just a beautiful, lovely story about the relationship between this five-year-old girl and her grandfather. And the pictures are just delightful. My kids love June. And so that's one example of an author illustrator, Emily Kate Moon. She did the whole thing, start to finish. I'm not sure. I think it came out last year, maybe the year before. It's a tender tribute to the little joys in life. And I just really, really love this book. My kids appreciate it. Another author illustrator out there, Jez Albaro. Is that Albaro? Yeah.
I'd have to look it up. But yes, that book actually is a current favorite at our house as well.
Hug.
Yeah, I think that, I'm not going to speak for, I'm not an author or an illustrator, but I think that those who do both do it quite well. I don't know what necessarily comes first. I'm sure it's different for each creator. I think some people have a vision in their head and start sketching the story, where other person might need to start with the writing and then map it out. I also think that we're seeing a lot more options in terms of longer books that have illustrations and text. I'll point to the winner of the Mildred L. Batchelder Award from this past year. It's a Swedish book called The Murderer's Ape by Jakob Wegelius. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right either. But this is a longer book. I mean, what we're looking at, about 2 inches thick here,
yeah,
novel.
That's a tome.
But you just open it, and this has just got this beautiful illustrated map in it, and the whole front of the book starts with these black and white illustrations showing the each character in the book, so kind of giving that visual of here's who the characters are. But the story is text with illustrations interspersed. And so that's something that you will see as well. So that even for books for older readers, there can be illustrations interwoven, or sometimes obviously the graphic novel style or more of the illustrated texts are, there's just more formatting changes. And I think that's really exciting. Obviously, we're a very visual culture nowadays,
yeah, yeah.
And it's fun to see how that's shaping up in books as well.
What age group, the Murderer's Ape, what would that be for?
I think this is for, obviously, every reader needs to figure out what's best for them,
yeah.
So I'm not going to determine that, but I would say that this is for I would say, probably older elementary to middle school,
mm-hmm,
age kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Batchelder Award goes up to 14, so certainly, I mean, 0 through 14, so you can get quite a age
spread,
range in
yeah.
there, and they don't dictate who this is for, but obviously probably capturing the older end of that. But, you know, a fun book there that's a little different from the others.
Yeah. Talking right now with Tessa Schmidt. She chairs a committee selecting an International Children's Literature Award winner. She's a public library youth consultant to the state's Department of Public Instruction. You can join in with your favorite children's literature at 800-642-1234. Perhaps you write children's books or you illustrate them. Tell us about your process, what you think about as you put together children's literature. What role should children's books have in learning? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's talk about your chairmanship for an award for an international children's book. What is the name of the honor, and what kind of books do you consider?
Sure. The award is called the Mildred L. Batchelder Award, most commonly called the Batchelder. And this is an award that was started in 1966 by the American Library Association, and it was in honoring of a longstanding librarian who just really believed in the impact of international children's books. And this award was started to really inspire publishers and encourage them, or even to reward them for the risk it takes in publishing an international children's book and the effort that goes into that. Now, you also have to think about what times were like in the 60s versus now, in terms of how the idea of global books or doing international publication was very different than it is nowadays, where we could talk to somebody in another country easily and share files back and forth. This was very different in the late 60s. But this award was really intended to make sure that American children were getting their hands on and being able to read and experience books that were loved in other countries. I'm sure that listeners might have read books like Pinocchio or Pippi Longstocking or even Anne of Green Gables from
yep.
Canada as books that you just might not even think where they were written, because they're just so universal and loved. Or think about books, for example, the books you brought in, Kate, that are just loved by your readers. Well, why might those books be enjoyed by children in other countries as well? So this award is to, again, encourage publishing of books that are maybe loved in another country and by another culture, and having them translated into English by an American publisher for an American audience. And so that's the award I serve on. And so this year, I will be with my committee evaluating the books that come in that are published, and hopefully next January announcing some great new award winners.
How have the themes evolved over the decades in children's books? Or do they still go back to some similar themes that we've seen all along?
That's a great question. I think that there are definitely some themes that are just universal human experiences. Stephanie, who was on the line earlier, sharing about where ideas come to her and what she's trying to share for the audiences of books that she writes. I think that there are definitely some themes that relate to, you know, humor and grief and things like that that are transcultural. Everybody can relate to them, whether it's for a very young audience or older. I definitely think that there are also some things, contemporary books that have either things that are happening right now that we would never think about addressing in a children's book years ago. And there's obviously so much fantasy out there that is just taking us to places and concepts that we've never really imagined before, and certainly some great...
Two words for you, Harry Potter.
Certainly some fantasy near future type books that are allowing readers to process things that are happening right now, some very contemporary issues and conflicts, but in a slightly alternate setting that allow more flexibility for how those issues are dealt with.
Well, some children's authors and illustrators, they wade into political thought, and others stray far away from that. What's the role of kids lit in society?
Well, I have a strong opinion on that, and I feel that it's very vital. It's one of it's just an avenue for young people to, like I said earlier, see themselves in the world they live in, and hopefully see themselves. Many young readers don't see themselves reflected in books, and hopefully that is changing. But books are an opportunity to both feel validated for the emotions or an experience that you might be having, as well as to give you a portal to something you don't know anything about or can't quite imagine from your own lived experiences, that really help you build that empathy, which I think we can all agree is just really, really critical. A children's book scholar, Rudine Sims Bishop, is quite well known for her concept that children's literature should offer children windows, mirrors, and sliding doors to the world. So by that meaning that they should be able to look out windows and see other things that aren't their own experience. They should also be validated by seeing themselves through mirrors and the sliding doors to kind of go between. And that to me is my passion and my service in the work that I do.
Tessa Schmidt is with us. She chairs a committee selecting an International Children's Literature Award winner. She's a public library youth consultant to the state's Department of Public Instruction. You can join in with your favorite children's literature at 800-642-1234. You can call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the great children's lit after this news update right here on the Ideas Network. Readers of all ages mark Hans Christian Andersen's birthday by celebrating books from around the world. Andersen was known for children's books and fairy tales. Today is International Children's Book Day. The host country this year is Latvia. The theme is "The Small is Big in a Book." With courage, foresight, perseverance, and the power of talent, we make literature and the art of books significant and meaningful. We're exploring children's titles from around the world on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tessa Schmidt is our guide. She chairs a committee selecting an International Children's Literature Award winner, and she consults with the State Department of Public Instruction. You can join in with your favorite experiences with children's literature at 800-642-1234. Can you count how many times you've read Dr. Seuss? What about Eric Carle's The Very Hungry Caterpillar? Maybe Llama Llama books circulate in your house and the spirit of Anna Dudney lives on. Join in the conversation or email ideas@wpr.org. Tessa, what makes a really good children's book? What is in the secret sauce?
I think that whether it's a novel, which would be text only, or a picture book with the text and pictures, I think that you need to connect to a reader. Not every book is for every child. And whether a book maybe only speaks to a handful, or it's so universal that it speaks to many, I think that you need to have that connection with the reader. I'm guessing that there are many adults on the line who have read books to children and just feel their eyes rolling while they're reading it because it's trite or just pandering, versus a book that just really feels authentic and rooted in the child's experience. It's just a quality that is hard to perceive, and I think also can make it sit really hard to write a high quality book. And so I just think we're really looking for that honesty and authenticity of speaking to the experience again, whether it's very real and rooted in the everyday routine or lifestyle of a child, or the imaginary experience. It still has to connect on that level.
Well, you often hear that you don't need to water things down for kids. They get it. They can understand.
Yes, and it's just quite amazing. Obviously, I'm an adult who loves children's books, both for myself and also, in my case, the child that I'm reading them to, my daughter. But I think that there's just so much complexity there. And often a great book, especially for a young child, has that appeal to the adult can enjoy reading it just as much as the child experiencing it. A book that I brought with me today that I want to talk about is an illustrated book. It's a picture book for older readers. It's called A Different Pond, and it's written by Bao Fi and illustrated by Tai Bu. I'm probably mispronouncing those. I should have listened ahead of time on teachingbooks.net to get those great author-illustrator pronunciations, but that's a different story. A Different Pond is a story essentially of a young boy going on an early morning fishing expedition with his dad, and it's just this wonderfully written story that is a one-on-one connection in that early morning hours with a young boy, and just that special time that he has with his dad before the day starts and school and work and all of that. But there are other layers to it as well. The boy... His father immigrated from Vietnam and is working several jobs, and that's one of the reasons they're fishing, for because of economic hardship. They need to be able to supply their own food because everything's so expensive in America. So even though it's just a few lines in the book, you're getting the understanding of things are challenging, even though, again, it's essentially about fishing, and that's what the story is about. There are other layers to it as well. As the book goes on, you also understand that the father really enjoys fishing because of his childhood experiences and fishing with his brother, and A Different Pond refers to the pond from his homeland that he likes to connect to, but also what sadness that brings because his brother died during the war. And again, this is all through the perspective of the young boy who's fishing with his father as he's trying to understand these big and kind of hard, heavy things, but again, in the simplicity of just this special routine he has. So I think a great book is able to play with those many things, and often through really incredible writing. This book won an award given out here at the University of Wisconsin, the Charlotte Zolotow Award, which is given to honor the high quality writing in picture books for young readers. And it also has other stickers on it.
That's won several multiple stickers,
several awards, but that one really speaks to the high quality writing in this book. It also has a very unique illustration style in that it has traditional page spreads of just one or two unique scenes, but then it kind of has these call-out boxes or small scenes that separate the page in panels. a la a graphic novel or a comic book, but again, because this book is for older readers and there's a little bit more text than might be in an average picture book for younger readers, it really helps separate the arc of the story and the different elements going on. And it was just a really superb combination between the author and illustrator in telling this story, again, which can be read on
multiple levels. If you want to have a little bit more of the dialogue or go deeper in an area, you can read those call outs, and yet the pictures are there for the younger children.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's fabulous. What is another book you've brought in?
Well, another book I brought is a translated book, going back to the Batchelder Award that I mentioned earlier. This book received an honor book this past year, and it's called When a Wolf is Hungry. And it was written by Christine Naumann-Villeman and illustrated by Christy Giacomo. And this is just a fabulous picture book, which I would guess if you found this on the public library shelves and checked it out, you would not think, oh, this is translated, this is set in another country, or this was written in a different language originally, because it's an animal story where you have animals being the different characters, and they all live in an apartment building, and these different antics going on. But the story starts out with a wolf who is in the woods, and he decides that he is hungry for a rabbit, and not just a rabbit. He wants a grain-fed, silky-haired rabbit, one with just a hint of sweetness, a city bunny. So you see this wolf leaving the autumnal woods, and he's got his tuxedo on and a knife in his hands. And, you know, I'm sure to listeners it sounds, well, that sounds a little dark and scary, but this is also illustrated in such a way that even young kids will see the humor of this, as this wolf with kind of shark-like teeth is heading out on his bicycle into the city to go find this succulent little bunny. And when he sees that there's a bunny who's listed on the apartment listing, he decides, well, I'm just going to get in the elevator and head on
up.
That's
my bunny.
Yep, yeah. Dinner awaits. And then as the story goes on, several things happen as he's trying to pursue this bunny. He drops his knife in the elevator and has to go back. And meanwhile, there are different residents of the apartment building who keep interfering inadvertently with his plans. So there's the humor there that he keeps getting thwarted. But of course, in the end, all is well. He becomes acquainted with all of the residents who invite him to this beautiful barbecue on top of the apartment building. And he thinks, well, now I know them all and I can't take this bunny. And so the last scene of this book is that his house is now for sale in the woods because he's moved to the city and has become a vegetarian. So there's just a lot of fun things going on in that book.
Lots of influences there, too, with modern life and with city dwelling versus urban and rural issues. So that is so much fun. Speaking of international authors, I brought in Henri Toulet, which press here is one of his quintessential ones, but so much movement in his books where he's directing kids to press here and the dots, and then the artistry, I think, of his works too, like the modern artistry, you have dots all over the place. And it, you know, in this age where we have so many screens, it's just really fun to have movement in picture books.
Absolutely. I mean, you could say that learning to swipe or turn is, you really learn that from books, and that there's more of a tactile and satisfactory experience when you're flipping the pages. And certainly that author and illustrator that you just mentioned, he is intentionally playing on our sensibilities of screen life in a book. So again, that's one of those that kind of has that nod to the adults reading the book, that they get a little bit at what he's playing with, but to young readers who hopefully don't have that much screen experience are also just encouraged by the directions, the author speaking directly to them and giving them instructions on how to interact with each page. I think that from my experience, being a teacher and a librarian with young people, they, when it's done well, the author speaking directly to the reader can be quite fun, and they enjoy the humor in that.
A little bit of chaos in a book is always a good thing, right? Because there's chaos in our lives.
Yes. And yes, and I think that you will find that that's, again, the beauty and the need for having a high-quality children's literature is that it's a safe place to explore these things that might be scary or that you might not know about, and especially for young readers to develop that safety and that love and appreciation of children's books in the lap of an adult who loves them is just a really, really critical experience to set you up for becoming a reader and to finding books as a place of learning and a place of safety as you progress. Progress in life is really valuable.
Well, this has been so much fun. Tessa, thank you so much for coming in.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Tessa Schmidt chairs a committee selecting an International Children's Literature Award winner. She's a public library youth and inclusive services consultant with Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction. Earlier, we talked with children's author Stephanie Bodine of Hudson, Wisconsin, whose 10th novel for young readers will be coming out later this year. This Children's Lit edition of The Morning Show was produced by Keely Boltina, with executive producer Michelle Johnson and Michael Deringer providing technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're with us on the Ideas Network.